Well, I concur with Norm. Thank you so much for spending your Saturday morning coming out. It means a great deal. It says something about your spirituality. And today I hope that we will be able to answer or to deal with some issues that that are very pertinent to our culture. I'm not quite sure I'm going to feel my way through this format. We may end up with a bunch of Q&A interactive, or we may end up with me lecturing to you. I have a lot of material. I got more material than we'll have time for in this hour. But we live in pretty desperate times, gentlemen. And in the midst of that, we have a revolution that is going on that is actually called a pandemic revolution or a pandemic issue. And that is the issue of sexuality in our day and time. There's a study by the Barna Group, which works largely with Baptist conservative kinds of groups, and that survey that they did basically said that 65% of the churched people, that's folks who attend church services, 65% of the men are caught up in pornography, not just occasional viewers, but actually caught up in the issues of pornography and sexual issues. We see that amplified even in church groups as our digital devices have become much even more of a challenge in our younger generation, where there is the challenge of sexting, things like Snapchat, that you have something on for a moment and then it kind of disappears. A lot in the digital world that we are currently facing and that we will continue to face as technology continues to move forward. So today what I want to talk with you about is the challenge of living in a cyber digital kind of world and who we as men are. I want to start by asking the question, where did you learn about the facts of life? And usually in sessions when I ask this, I get answers like, well, I learned about these from the shower room in middle school or seventh grade or whatever that term. That's where I first learned about male-female difference. That's where I saw my first pornography. That would be something I would expect from the baby boomers to answer. But that's not the answer I get from others. What I get is well, I ran across it on the internet when I was in the third grade. And so the age is getting younger and younger and younger when we have exposure to the problems of our very permissive culture. As a matter of fact, what we have found is that there has been a decrease in the number of people who are signing up for the pay websites, the pornography websites that are pay sites. And, you know, to look at that statistic, it's like, well, maybe it's getting better. No, it's not getting better. There's more free sites going up. And people are spending time on those sites where you can just trip trailers and kind of click from thing to thing to thing before to kind of sample things before you go in. So there's a lot of free stuff out there. Sometimes our young people will tell us that they were doing some kind of a research paper and they clicked to a website. They were doing a study on the White House, for instance. I would think that would be a pretty no-brainer, but what they found out is the difference in .org and .com is the difference in history and porn. So the websites that are out there, they're just getting more and more egregious. So the question is, where'd you learn it? And here, unfortunately, is the answer. By the way, I do a lot of individual counseling with members of the church. So the fact is my private practice is pretty exclusively members of the church or their families. And what I find is the answers that I get are quite alarming for me. And that is that Satan is the one who is tutoring many of our young people on sexuality. And God's people have been somewhat embarrassed or perhaps somewhat silent on that subject, and we've let the world do our teaching for us. And no wonder that we're coming out with the outcomes we have when we aren't teaching what the Bible teaches, for whatever reason. The area of sexuality is usually a kind of a, we don't necessarily talk a lot about that. But the Bible is full of this information. But the question is, where do you learn about sexuality? Where do you learn about fidelity in marriage? Now, if we're going to limit that to our assemblies, then pretty much we're going to hear some lessons about fornication, or we'll hear it mentioned. We'll hear adultery mentioned. We'll hear some of the connected sins, licentiousness, lasciviousness. We'll see that connected, but you don't dig down a lot into that, especially in a public assembly. And I think that's because of discretion. But the question is, where do we get this information? And the answer is, the information's all over God's Word. You can't you can't get past the second chapter of Genesis before you find out there's a difference in the genders. As a result of this, Satan has done a great job of perverting the minds of people, and unfortunately, from where I stand, we're not doing a very good job of countering what Satan has done. So, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 3 through 8, Paul gives us probably the most concise statement of our sexuality. And what he says is, this is the will of God. That makes it very clear. This is underlined. This is God's will. Even your sanctification, even what sets you apart, this is God's will. And look what he says it is. That you abstain from fornication. Now, the word fornication is a fairly general word for sexual immorality. It is encompassing of several things. It is encompassing of homosexuality. The book of Jude talks about the men of Sodom who committed fornication. And there was a situation clearly of homosexuality and fornication used to include that. Basically, fornication is any illicit sexual activity he says, let me move on, that each one of you knows how to possess himself of his own vessel in sanctification and honor. All right, now I have to ask the question, what's he talking about, your own vessel? He's talking obviously to men and women here, and he's talking about that part of you, your anatomy that makes you a male, or if it's a female, that part that makes her a female. And what he says is that we need to know how to possess our genders in sanctification, being set apart, and in honor. That word honor has to do with respect. It's respect for ourselves, for our God, for our marriage partner, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But he goes on to say, that's what you're supposed to do. Possess yourself in sanctification and honor. In other words, you're set apart for a purpose. If you are not married, then you are celibate, and you're to be celibate, and your vessel is one that's not in use, not even with yourself. And I'll talk about that in a moment. But we set ourselves apart basically as a consecration to God. Let me go to another verse very quickly, and that's in Romans, the 12th chapter, verse 1 and 2. It's not on these slides. But what that passage says is that we are to present our bodies as a living sacrifice, holy, there's your concept again, and acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. God doesn't ask us to do anything with our body that's unreasonable. He says that's reasonable service. That word service has to do with a generic word for worship, not proskuneo assembly worship. But generally, this is how we show that we're serving God. By presenting our body as a living sacrifice. It's like I bring my body, the castle of my soul, and I present it to God and say, here is my living sacrifice. Notice, not a dead sacrifice. It's a living sacrifice. The life I live in honor in this body. By the way, your body is the only vehicle that you have to express your soul. You can't express what's going on with your soul without your body. You're going to need your movements, you're going to need your language, your tone, all that stuff. The body's going to be involved in that. So it's important for us as men to possess ourselves in sanctification and honor. The concept, if we go to the idea that we are a royal priesthood, the priesthood had to keep itself clean, cleansed. There were rituals they went through to do that. And in the same way, we as Christians do that. Well, let's get on this verse. That's what he tells us to do. But in case we miss that, he puts it in the negative. And there in verse 5, he tells us what not to do. Not in the passion of lust. That's almost a vulgarism that just, not in the passions of lust. You know, not going around like dogs in heat. But that's what you don't do. All right? And he says, even as the Gentiles who know not God. Who does that? People that don't know God do that. People who know God go around with their bodies in sanctification and holiness, and they possess their sexual identity, their gender, their anatomy. They possess that in honor. Okay? Do you see that? All right. And then he goes on to say, it tells us what to do, what not to do, that no man transgress and wrong his brother in this matter, because the Lord is an avenger in all these things, as also we forewarned you and testified. For God called us not for uncleanness, but in sanctification. Now that word uncleanness isn't a word we usually use in the sexual context, but it's a sexual context here. And the uncleanness has to do with just acting filthy. Just acting nasty. Acting vulgar is the way we would put it. Basically going around just acting like we are sex objects, and it's our job to try to conquer all women, or at least the ones that we want to look at. He says, don't do that. God didn't call you for that. You've been called for sanctification, to be set apart. Look at this. Here's the threat. Therefore, he that rejects not man, but God, who gives his Holy Spirit. Now, does that tell us pretty clearly where the boundaries are? I think it does. And that's why I say this one probably is the most concise passage on this. But that's what God says about this. And that's a passage that if we struggle with with how we express ourselves sexually, we have to keep coming back to this, because this is about our sanctification and holiness. This is not something that's optional. This is not something, well, I've just got a problem, or, well, I'm struggling with that. This is something that has to do with relationship with God, our being set apart, and our being holy as God's children. We don't want to work that passage to death, but we could spend the whole time on that. The next thing I want you to look at is how God views sexuality that is expressed outside of his boundaries. And to do that, I'm going to the Old Testament first. Capital punishment was the penalty for expressing your sexuality outside of the bonds where God put it. In other words, incest. Here's somebody who wants to have a relationship with a close family member. And the verses are here. By the way, these PowerPoints are available to you. Norm, or someone will see that you can have access to these. There's a lot of material we're going to look at today. But incest, adultery has to do with unfaithfulness of a marriage partner, someone who's already committed in marriage and decides to step out and cheat. Rape is discussed in the Old Testament. Whoredom, bestiality, which, by the way, is making a very rampant comeback, especially with the porn sites. Bestiality, sodomy, that would be homosexuality. And then a non-virgin bride, a bride that doesn't have the tokens of her virginity. In other words, she's been sexually active prior to marriage. I can get graphic with that, but there's no reason to. But all of those things call for the death penalty. Okay? In the exception of that would be rape. And that would be if a woman is raped outside of hearing distance of anybody. Then there is an exception clause in there, But the clause, if you'll read that closely, says that you marry your rapist. That would be a mess, wouldn't it? But what God has done in this Old Testament passages is He has said it very clearly that your sexuality is not intended to be shared with the public. It is not intended to be shared with anyone except your marriage partner. And I'm going to assume that a lot of us are married today. And what that basically means is the only outlet you have to express your sexuality is with the woman you're married to, or if you're not married, with the woman you would be married to at some point in time once you're married. That's the boundaries God's placed around this. Now let's look at some other things. When people try to step outside of what God has said, then they get into fantasy. And that's what's happening with our digital world, is we get into the fantasy land of, oh man, she's hot, she's good looking, you know, I like this, that, or the other about her. Or so we start fantasizing. Along about the first time that we have our first pornographic experience and any playing that people do with himself during that time, along about that time is when that's when our sexuality becomes unleashed. And here's Satan's trap. When you start a sex life early and you start it down the road with pornography or with acting out physically with someone else, you are opening channels that are going to be very, very difficult to close back up. You've awakened your sexuality before it's time. And I talk to many Christian men, and what they will tell me is, well, I figured, well, I shouldn't be doing this. I feel guilty. You know, I feel like shame, all that kind of thing. And what I figured is once I was married, that wouldn't be a problem anymore because I'd have a free pass anytime I wanted to have sex with my wife. Well, that's how Satan pulls you in. Because as we'll look in this particular lesson, is once we have opened the sexual channels and we have trained our brain to think in terms of fantasy, then the reality, the real deal, isn't to be compared. So with a fantasy, it could be anything, whatever we want, with whoever we want, whenever we want, it can be anything. And there's not a woman alive can compete with that. But women do know. If you're a wife, you're with your wife, and you're maybe physically with her, but your head's not there. They'll know someone else is in that bed with them, and that'll put a strain in a marriage. I helped Norm's brother-in-law conduct a retreat for families. We had several Christian families there. And we thought, well, okay, these are people having marital conflict, and we need to talk about kind of how to resolve communication issues and those sort of things. What we did a day and a half into it, you know what we found out with every man that was there? Is that the key, the core of all their issues that were driving their marriage apart was pornography. And we had to shift from what we were looking at because these other things were the symptoms. And we had to go back to core, and the core was not being faithful to one another sexually, that someone's out here having an affair with a machine or with a fantasy. The fantasy is not the reality. It really won't ever be the reality. I want to talk with you a little bit about men and the men's physical drive. And this is kind of an anatomy lesson. And I'll try not to be too graphic here. But the man's body, along about the age of puberty, begins producing semen. And if we awaken that ahead of time, then what we end up doing is creating a demand when we don't have an outlet. And what the body starts doing is saying, hey, we need to supply more of this because this is in regular use. And so as as men start self-stimulating, masturbating, as men do that, then what they do is they start building up this desire. The body says, hey, you need this. This happens all the time. We got to keep the supply up because the demand's out here. And what we find is what's being reported as sometimes folks will come and talk to me, men will come talk with me, and one gentleman says, I feel so guilty, so ashamed. You know, I'm masturbating 7 times a day, and he's not lying that I can tell. That's pretty compulsive. But he has built this up in his life. He's a young man in his early 20s. But he's built this thing up in his life to where he started something he can't really stop. And now it is a significant issue for him. But that buildup is going to demand release. When there is release, the body triggers, okay, we're running low on this, let's produce some more. And what men will say is, man, I'm just kind of, I'm hot and bothered all the time. Many would say I'm horny all the time. We're going to talk plainly in this since it's just us men. But sex in marriage releases hormones into the male brain. One of those is dopamine. And this is where we get the ambivalence when it comes to pornography, is that it feels good, shouldn't do it. Feels good, shouldn't do it. So this dopamine is your feel-good drug. There's also a thing called oxytocin. These are chemical things in your brain. And that is a bonding hormone. Now, that's important because if you're with your marriage partner, then that bonds you to your marriage partner. There's another one or two in here that we won't mention today. But that bonds the individual to their marriage partner. But what happens when that chemistry is released and the object of our sexuality is pornography? We bonded ourselves to that pornography. That's a chemistry in the brain. Okay. And so that becomes where the natural desire is released to an unnatural desire. All right. And literally what God wants us to do, that oxytocin actually is the thing that makes us addicted. Okay. And God wants us to be addicted to our wives. Or wife singular, rather. He wants us to be addicted to the wife. And when we keep sexuality in its right area, then that addiction becomes very natural that our desire, 1 Corinthians 7, our desire then is for her. Now, the truth of the matter is, if I were talking to women, I would have something similar to say on this to the women, although they tend to be, rather than the supply and demand, they tend to be more hormonal in their desire. That's a whole different phase. There are no women here, no Bruce Jenners here. Okay, all right. So. So when a couple has a new exciting sexual experience, another chemical that is released by the brain during the sexual activity, we'll just call it PEA, it's released along with adrenaline. Now, we get this chemistry going. That's the chemistry inside of our bodies that gives us that feel good, that release, that, you know, I feel relaxed, you know, and a lot of times we want to zone off, roll over, and go to sleep. All right, that's what that does. Now, what happens when we are expressing this outside of marriage is that we find alternate reasons to be sexually active, have sex with ourselves, if you would, instead of a partner. So we have a fantasy masturbation kind of thing going on. And we're having sex with ourselves. What happens during that time is these chemicals are still being released in our brain. And what we're doing is we're bonding to the pornography, but we're also experiencing something that is very much like the brain experiences with some of these same things on crack cocaine. So that's where the addictive piece comes in. The ritual piece, over and over and over. And then kind of hating ourselves afterwards. Or frustrated because we can't seem to get this under control. So literally we become intoxicated on our own chemistry. Now, when I talk with some men, most men, I'll ask them, well, why are we doing this? Now, most men do not go to the pornography and, you know, get a quickie off the pornography. What they do is they'll start the cycle. They'll go into the pornography. They will ride the orgasmic high, and they'll surf. They'll go to this picture, then they'll click over to this picture, then to this, and they surf for a while. All right, what's happening during that time is these chemicals aren't being released. They're being built up ready for release. And that's where the excitement comes from viewing these different things on the screen. Now, once the chemistry is released, as in orgasm, once that's released, now what do we have? Well, that episode's over. Okay? So we shut the computer down, erase history or whatever it is, however we try to hide it, and then we move on to the next thing. Now, why do men do this? If I ask that question to women, they would say men are oversexed. Okay? Usually. But that's not why men do this. When I talk with them, that's part of it. When I talk with them, it's like, why do you do this? Well, I had a rough day at work, and I was feeling so uptight, so stressed, I just needed to relax. And so we go and we start surfing. We do what we do. In pornography, we start surfing, and we tantalize ourselves, and then we have an orgasm, and then we get on with our evening. What they describe is they're addressing boredom, anger, the stress of the job or of life. And that's initially some of the things that take them there, because this body chemistry has a soothing aspect to it that is very much like taking a tranquilizer or taking something that makes us chill, takes the stress off. Same kind of thing as a person that has an alcohol problem. Is they stop off for happy hour. They have a few to relax. Okay. Why are we looking at this stuff? To relax. To let the stress go. So I don't feel so uptight. Or because I'm angry. Sometimes that anger is at life and life situations. Sometimes that anger is toward the wife. Okay. But there are more than one reason people don't always go and start this out because of the sexual experience. It ends up there. But it doesn't always start because of that. Is this making sense? Okay. If you shake your head, I don't think you're a chronic masturbator. Okay. All right. Now, in the males, sometimes men have the idea, well, when I get married, then a great sex life in marriage is going to, that'll solve all my problems. But the truth is that most men, it takes a while to achieve compatibility, sexual compatibility in marriage. Most men have a lifetime struggle to control their sexuality, and it's the struggle between our hormones and our spirituality, our sanctification. All right, and sometimes people think that being married means I won't have any problems anymore. Not so, because there are periods of abstinence during marriage. In other words, what I'm really saying this morning is, gentlemen, we cannot allow our sexuality to define us or to determine what we do. That belongs to God. We have surrendered ourselves, our body, to God. All right. Now, sometimes when we look at the issue of pornography, I ask, and usually I do, with married couples, it's like, can you tell me something about your sexual frequency in marriage? And what I'm finding more and more is that for a lot of folks, it's pretty infrequent. For some, I would expect, as they maybe have some aging issues or some health issues, that the sex life is really not particularly there. But for others, what I get, for those that are physically capable, husband and wife, what I get is something like, well, we only have sex about four times a year. That's once a quarter. That's once every 3 months, every 90 days. That's not very frequent. So what happens during these other periods of time? What do you do with your sexuality? Sometimes I get the answer, well, we never. It's been 2 or 3 years. A lady told me the other day in their marriage. And then we'll have others that are kind of like jackrabbits. It's 4 times a day, or 2 or 3 times a day, except during the time of the month for the wife. All right. So with this, that's about frequency. And every couple, every married couple is going to have to determine what is the frequency. Every dating couple is going to need to work on what do we do to stay away from turning things on before they're supposed to be turned on. What do you do with that? Because a lot of our dating, a lot of the expectations of dating are you go out and you kiss and you get turned on and you go back to someone's apartment. If you watch TV, you get that script pretty down pretty close. But what do we do? During the times of mate selection in dating, we'll talk more about this tomorrow, but during that time, what we need to do is to talk about things that are of critical importance. Most males or females could figure out how to be sexual, but not everybody can figure out how to be compatible. And so the mate selection time is a time to see what do we have in common. You know, what are we in agreement on? Where are the areas of conflict? And we'll talk more about that tomorrow. But let's look at what God says on this. He talks, and notice he talks about the works of the flesh. And he says they are made known. They're open. And he talks about adultery and fornication and uncleanness. That's an unclean word again. And then he talks about lasciviousness. That's a fourth word that comes into the sexual discussion, which means things that incline us to lust or to have passion toward someone. And he says those are works of the flesh. And those that practice such shall not inherit the kingdom of God. What if I'm dating and our date is built around lasciviousness, trying to incline us to lust? We're going to go places, do things that are going to kind of be turn-ons for us. Well, that's practicing one of the works of the flesh. And we're told very clearly, if you do that, you're not going to heaven. So you got to watch out what you do on your dates or as you're building a relationship. Romans 1 talks about those that didn't have natural affection. And they burned in their lust. And that concept of burning in lust is they got turned on. But it was one toward another. In this case, it was same gender. It was males with males, females with females. And the Bible says, working that, and here's a fifth word, working that which is unseemly in the sight of God. That's a fifth sexual word. We don't talk about that much, but it's still there. Okay. In other words, it's inappropriate. The biggest, one of the big problems that I see with homosexuality is the parts don't fit. God made the parts to fit. But in homosexuality, the parts don't fit. Natural. There's many other problems with that. In Matthew 5, Jesus talks about looking to lust. In other words, the intention. I intentionally am going to look to check you out sexually. Okay. And he talks about people, and we'll come back to that passage in just a moment. Well, let's just do it now. But in Matthew 5, he talks about not looking to lust. Matthew 5:27. And then, down at the end of that section, as it gets on down into, about verse 32 or so, then he talks about divorce and remarriage, or divorce. All right? So I look at that, and it's like, all right, here's this context of looking to lust and divorce. Those are both for unfaithfulness. And that's a sexual context. But there's something else right in the middle there. You know what's in the middle? If your eye offends you, pluck it out. If your hand offends you, cut it off. I got to ask the question, well, is he just like throwing a whole bunch of general things out here? Or is this in context? Is that telling me something? Now, if your eye offends you, what am I doing when I'm looking at pornography? My eyes offended me. I can't control my eyes. Peter talked about those that had eyes full of adultery and could not cease from sin. In other words, they were always looking for to see what they shouldn't be seeing. They had eyes, they had a mind, sex-saturated mind. And they had built themselves to that point. All right, but this passage in Matthew 5 talks about if your eye offends, you pluck it out. Now, don't go poke your eye out if you have a problem with this. He's using an analogy here. And basically what he says is go to whatever extent you need to where that's not a problem. Okay. If your hand offends you, what do you use your hand for? In pornography, what do you use your hand for? Is that not one of the applications, at least masturbation or self-stimulating? Okay. So we got a problem with our eye and with our hand. And here's a clear passage in the middle of a sexual context. And I think this is progressive. He's talking about you look to lust, then you act out on that lust, and then you get in a marriage and you can't contain yourself to one person, and divorce may be allowed in those situations. That's a context. And I have trouble getting out of that context. But you all do your own study on that. But I do know that the eye and the hand are problems in the pornography stuff, okay, and in real life as well. All right, evil men and seducers, look at that word seducer. What will happen? Where they start is not where they stop. They'll get worse and worse. It is progressive. And here's what we know in terms of pornography and the sexual addictions, is where you start is not where you stop. Once you start feeding this appetite, it does not have a natural stopping place. Actually, there are 7 levels of this addiction to the sexual pornography kind of stuff. The more you feed it, the deeper you go in these levels. Then Peter talks about those that entice unsteadfast souls. I think in one context he talks about silly women. And here's somebody who's just coming out of the world, and here comes a guy and takes them right back into the world. And Peter's not talking very nice about them. All right, he talks about the blackness of darkness is reserved for them. That's pretty dark. You ever been out in pitch black? Anybody been in some of these caves? Go in a cave and they turn the lights out to show you what total darkness is? That's what he says is reserved for those that would actually be out trying to seduce the sisters. All right, so Job says, I made a covenant with my eyes not to look upon a maiden. Now, Job is very likely from the patriarchal age. All right, it's one of the earliest books in the Bible. And it looks like he may have had, he had to figure out how to control this. Okay, that's before the days of digital and magazines and that sort of thing. So this is an issue. Sexuality getting out of bounds is an issue. And Job recognized that. So what he did is he made a deal with himself that I'm not going to be checking out the women. Okay, you may want to make the same kind of deal yourself. Okay, all right. There's different kinds of sexual experiences. Patrick Carnes, by the way, is one of the early writers on this material. Has a number of books. One is called Out of the Shadows. Another is called Facing the Shadows. Those are excellent workbooks to help people go through their sexual history. Another group is the Faithful and True group, which is out of Minneapolis, and that's Mark and Debbie Laser, and these are spiritual based people. They're kind of Calvinistic, but they approach a lot of things the way we would. And you can get all kinds of workbooks and materials, both for those with the problem as well as the spouse who has been betrayed by this problem. And they have workshops and so forth, as does the group that I'm with. I have to do a commercial on that with Leaving the Pit. By the way, if you don't know about Leaving the Pit, go to leavingthepit.com. End of commercial. All right. All right. What happens in the internet addiction is the same kind of thing as with substance addiction. People intend to go just to kind of experiment, and then they find themselves staying there longer and longer and longer, using for longer periods of time. Inability to stop or quit. We find periods of time, people will talk about how they go into the zone, very much like an alcoholic talks about blackouts, and so forth. So the criteria for the sexual addiction is pretty much the same as for other kinds of addiction. All right. And as we said, where it starts is not where it stops. It will go longer and longer and longer and deeper and deeper. And actually, once we start feeding this appetite, the fantasy appetite, then ultimately, along about the third or fourth level, then it comes off the screen. That's where the strip clubs come in, the exotic dancers. That's where, I'm getting pop-ups on my screen. Hey, I live 2 miles from you. Let's get together and do it. And that'll pop up on your screen. You'll find some websites of people who just want to have casual sex, men and women. And I know those websites, at least I know where they are, but I'm not going to tell you where they are unless you be tempted with them. But they're out there. And these aren't sex for hire. This is just people that just want to get together and be sexual. Kind of acting like dogs in heat. It's like, you know, there's some pretty serious stuff out there at the click of a mouse. For those that don't want to be physically interactive with someone, you can go to special rooms that are called hotels online. And there, somebody will click off with you, and you go in there and you design your own stick figure with full anatomy, and person on the other end, and you go in here and you manipulate the mouse to be sexual with each other. And usually some kind of masturbation is going on in real life as well. That's sick stuff. But all of this panorama of sexuality outside of the range where God put it, that is coming full force. Some men have been caught up in it. Some have not. So we're not saying all men have problems with this. But what we are saying is, guys, we got to pull together and help each other. Okay. So if we're struggling with this, there's a lot of shame and guilt tied to it. But if we're struggling with this, we need to yell for some help. And I'll tell you why. Because our best thinking got us into that. And likely our best thinking is not going to get us out. So whose thinking do I need? We need the help of each other. And I'm not talking so much about, let me go tell you my problem so you can beat me over the head. This is about helping each other. In my view, this is where passages like James 5 comes in, where we confess our faults one to another, and we pray one for another. This is where the concept of accountability partners comes in, where we have someone that we're accountable to. There are several groups that, as I've done this a while, that have started to form. Actually, there's one here in the Nashville area. It's kind of defunct. But Nashville is where they have one of the national conferences for people who are trying to exercise fidelity in marriage. It's an SA group. Brentwood over here is where the literature comes out of, for that particular group, for the SA group, sex addict group. They have a book they call the White Book. This is very organized stuff of men that are really struggling with the issue, usually men who are somewhat faith-based men, not all members of the church. But there's a lot of stuff going on, and what they recognize is the power of the group. Up north, where I am in the Indianapolis area, there is a group that meets on Monday nights at one of the congregations. The elders allowing them to use one of the rooms, and they talk about how to get their sexual life under control. And they're using some of the study materials, like Every Man's Battle and some of that, those materials, to try to deal with that. They have actually they have an app that is on their phone, and I call it their bat phone. So when they're in danger, then they hit that app, and everybody in their group gets notified, hey, I'm really struggling tonight. And what will happen most of the time is they'll get four or five phone calls pretty quickly or text messages in sequence to say, hey, get out of there. Let's go down to Panera and get a cup of coffee or something. But let's change the setting. When you change the setting, you have to react differently. Kind of like if you stay in the barber shop too long, guess what happens? You'll get a haircut. If you stay in the same setting too long, you go back to where you are. So they help each other. When you're thinking it's stuck, you help each other kind of think through it. Here's what we know. About 20 minutes is all it takes to get through that strong temptation. It's about what it takes. I helped run a suicide hotline, and the deal I would make, somebody called me, they're getting ready to kill themselves. It's like, well, tell you what, once you put that on the back burner, you can do that in 20 minutes if you feel the need to. But let's talk for 20 minutes. Would you make that deal with me? And, you know, we get through that 20 minutes or so, and like they decided they didn't want to do that anymore. Why? Because the mind is not capable of maintaining an intense thought for more than about 15 to 20 minutes. So you get through that period of temptation. But during that time, the thing you want to do most of all is you want to chase that high with this. All right. There's a lot more on these, and I have spent... anyway, we're out of time, about a minute left. All right. But once people get into the pornography cycle, then it's a revolving door. And this particular diagram is from Patrick Kearns, and what he starts with is, okay, now we've got the craving, and then there's something, some visual trigger. Maybe it's something on TV, maybe it's a magazine at the checkout, maybe we're in the store and somebody comes along and they're showing too much skin or too tight in their pants, no slack in the slacks, and so the visual triggers start. And then the uncomfortableness, then the fantasy kicks in, and you see how that cycle goes to where finally we have a release, and then we get the guilt and the shame. And we get into this, I'm not going to do that anymore, you know, that was wrong, and then the cycle starts over again. How do you get out of that cycle? At any point in that cycle, you can intervene. But the way you get out of the cycle is you've got to get out of the turnstile. And what that means is that we may have to figure out, I could go to heaven without a computer or without a cell phone. I may not be able to go to heaven with one. If this is my problem, then I've got to do something to bring that under control. And that's where my cell phone is. I've got to do something to bring this under control. And that may mean that if in my job or business that I've got to have a cell phone or a computer, I've got to put some rules into place to where that's not going to be an issue. And essentially that means figuring out something, have your stuff in public. Covenant Eyes is a group that a lot of men will have that put on their computer. There are report mechanisms that you can sign up for that will send your wife a list of all the places you visited online. There's ways around all this, by the way. If you want to do wrong, you'll figure a way to do it. But there are some things that are deterrents that you can put in place on this. A lot more things. But our time is pretty much up. Okay. The issue here is that our sexuality is somewhat ambivalent. Feels good, shouldn't do it. Feels good, shouldn't do it. And because of that, we get caught up in this cycle. The question. This is a struggle between the flesh and the spirit. And so the question is, which one will win? And the answer is, the one you feed the most. If we are feeding lust, lust will win. If we're feeding our spirituality, spirituality will win. But tell you what, guys, we need each other. While you may not have a problem like the one we've talked about this morning, there are people around you that need your strength. They need to know how to do that. And we got to start talking to each other. You know, this is an uncomfortable topic for many, but we've got to start talking to each other. we need to give each other support and help on this. And if I can be of any help to you, I can leave a card with you if you want to talk to me or at least be in touch with the networks that we're trying to help set up. All right, there's a lot more in this. I didn't get even a third of the way through it, but there's a lot more here. I would encourage each of you to spend time in prayer and meditation, and the start of fixing this problem is to make your commitment to God. Lord, I surrender this problem to you, and I'm going to need all the help I can get. And then look for where that help is. God will open those doors for you, but you got to be willing to walk through them. That's our lesson this morning. Thank you so much.